John Gielgud, Michael Horden, Joan Greenwood, and Simon Ward as Smith.
No, 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 with a P. P-S-M-I-T-H. I should explain to you that I started life without the initial letter. My father always clung ruggedly to the plain Smith. But it seemed to me that there were so many Smiths in the world that a little variety might be introduced. The P, I should add for your guidance, is silent, as in Tisis, Psychic, and Ptarmigan. You follow me?
Leave It to Smith, dramatized by Michael Bakewell, from the novel by P.G. Wodehouse.
This, just in case any of you have been misled by the title, is one of the Blandings stories. It is unique in the Chronicles of Blandings in that it contains neither Lord Emsworth's captive balloon of a pig, the Empress, nor his irrepressible brother Galahad. But it does contain Smith. Blandings, a kind of earthly paradise. It's quite close to where my parents used to live in Shropshire, and the Blandings Chronicles have multiplied like rabbits down the years since I first hit on the idea in a moment of desperation in 1915. In my childhood, I had met with earls and butlers and younger sons in some profusion, and it struck me that the slick magazines would like to read about them. They did. The saga you are going to hear tonight was written on Long Island in 1922 in a place reveling in the name of Great Neck. Clarence, 9th Earl of Emsworth, whose manner I have frequently compared to a wet sock, is in a melancholy condition. He looks blearily out over his beautiful gardens, but his heart does not rejoice.
Just a blur. Can't make out a thing.
For he's lost his glasses, and without them is as blind as a bat.
Who's that?
It is I, your lordship, Beach.
Ah, Beach. Yeah. Have you found him?
I have searched assiduously, your lordship, but without avail. Thomas and Charles also announce non-success. Stokes has not yet made his report. I am redispatching Thomas and Charles to your lordship's bedroom. I trust that their efforts will be rewarded.
Blind as a dratted bat.
Hello, Governor. Here you've lost your glasses.
That is so.
Nuisance, what?
Undeniably.
Ought to have a spare pair.
Broken my spare pair.
Oh, tough luck. And lost the other.
And, as you say, lost the other.
Have you looked for the bally thing?
I have.
Must be somewhere, I mean.
Quite possibly.
Where did you see them last?
Go away.
Eh?
Go away.
Go away?
Yes, go away.
Right-o.
Oh. Blind as a dratted bat.
Earls, butlers, and younger sons. See what I mean? But every Garden of Eden must have its serpent. And into Lord Emsworth's paradise, I decided to introduce Rupert Baxter, efficient, steel-rimmed, the brains of Blandings.
Lord Emsworth?
Yeah, Baxter, my dear fellow. I've lost my glasses. I've mislaid them. I can't think where they've gone to. You haven't seen them anywhere, by any chance?
Yes, Lord Emsworth. Ah. They are hanging down your back.
Down my back? Why? Why, bless my soul, why? Bless my soul, so they are. Thank you, Baxter, thank you. You're invaluable. Now, where's that brute MacAllister? Huh? What is it, Baxter?
The car will be at the door at 2 sharp.
Car? What car?
The car to take you to the station.
Station? What station?
You have perhaps forgotten, Lord Emsworth, that you arranged with Lady Constance to go to London this afternoon.
Go to London? In weather like this? I've got to have a serious talk to MacAllister about the Hollyhocks. Why should I go to London? I hate London.
You arranged with Lady Constance that you would give Mr. McTodd lunch tomorrow at your club.
Who the devil is McTodd?
The well-known Canadian poet.
Never heard of him.
Lady Constance has long been an admirer of his work. She wrote inviting him, should he ever come to London, to pay a visit to Blandings. He is now in London and is to come down tomorrow for 2 weeks. Lady Constance suggested that as a compliment to Mr. McTodd's eminence in the world of literature, you should meet him in London and bring him back here yourself.
It's a perfectly preposterous idea. Am I expected to leave Blandings in weather like this and entertain some wretched poet fella? Just because Connie's taken it into her head to... Oh, hello, Connie.
Ah, there you are, Clarence.
Before we go any further, I'd better have a word with you about Lady Constance. She is one of that monstrous regiment of women, Lord Emsworth's sisters. They vary in size, shape, and complexion, but they have this in common. They can all reduce Lord Emsworth to a craven, apologetic heap. Constance, when thwarted, behaves like Cleopatra on one of her bad days.
Look here, Connie.
If you will excuse me, I have one or two things to attend to.
Of course, Mr. Baxter.
Look here, Connie. You know I hate literary fellows. It's bad enough having them hanging about the house like that Peavy woman, but when it comes to going to London...
Clarence.
I never could stand literary fellows, and... By Jove, literary females are worse. Miss Peavy? Who is Miss Peavy?
My dear Clarence, if you do not know that Miss Peavy is one of the leading poetesses of the younger school...
No, I don't mean that. I mean, who is she? Where did you find her?
I first made Aileen's acquaintance on Atlantic Liner when Joe and I were coming back from our trip round the world. She was very kind to me when I was feeling the motion of the vessel.
Yeah, but who is she?
If you mean, what is her family? I think she once told me she was connected with the Rutlandshire Peavies.
I never heard of them. If they're anything like Miss Peavy, God help Rutlandshire.
Excuse me. I forgot to mention, Lord Emsworth, that to suit everybody's convenience, I've arranged that Miss Halliday shall call to see you at your club tomorrow after lunch.
Who's Miss Halliday? Another literary female?
Miss Halliday is the young lady who is coming to Blandings to catalogue the library.
Catalogue the library? What does he want cataloguing for?
It has not been done since the year 1885.
Well, look how splendidly we've got on without it.
No, don't be ridiculous, Clarence. The catalogue of a great library like this must be brought up to date. I do wish you would try and wake up and take an interest in things. If it wasn't for Mr. Baxter, I don't know what would happen.
I have written to Miss Halliday suggesting 2:30 as a suitable time for the interview.
But look here, Baxter, it's out of the question. I can't possibly leave Blandings. The weather may break at any moment. I don't want to miss a day of it.
The arrangements are all made.
Send a wire. Unavoidably detained.
Possibly if you were to make the suggestion to Lady Constance.
Dash it. Well, if I've got to go, I've got to go. But to leave my garden and go and stew in London at this time of year.
Connie!
Joe! I was going into the garden.
Come into the smoking room a minute. I want to talk to you.
Well, Joe, what is it?
Connie, I've been thinking about that necklace again.
Oh, don't be so silly, Joe. You haven't called your wife into this stuffy room on a lovely morning to talk about that for the 100th time.
But, Connie, there's no sense in taking risks.
No, don't be absurd. What risks can there be?
There was a burglary over at Winston Court a day or two ago, and that's not 10 miles from here.
No, don't be so fussy, Joe.
That necklace cost me nearly £20,000.
I know, Joe, I know.
It ought to be in the bank.
Once and for all, I will not keep that necklace in a bank. What on earth is the use of having a beautiful necklace if it's lying in the strong room of a bank all the time? There's the county ball coming on. I need it. Do stop worrying me about it.
I'm sorry, Connie. Don't get worked up. That wasn't what I wanted to talk to you about, anyway.
No.
Connie.
Yes, Joe.
Connie, I had a letter from Phyllis this morning. She says in her letter that young Jackson has got the chance of buying a big farm. In Lincolnshire, I think she said. If he can raise £3,000. So I was just thinking, it just crossed my mind. It isn't if it were speculation. It occurred to me, and they would pay us good interest on the loan.
What loan?
Well, I was thinking, but just a suggestion, you know, what struck me was that if you were willing, we might lend them the money.
We had better settle this thing once and for all, Joe. As you know, when we were married, I was ready to do everything for your stepdaughter. I was prepared to be a mother to her. I gave her every chance. I took her everywhere. And what happened?
Yes, I know, but...
I found her a perfectly presentable man with plenty of money.
Shocking young ass and a rip. What's more, I've heard stories.
Nonsense. He was a delightful young man and would have made Phyllis perfectly happy. Instead of marrying him, she chose to go off with this Jackson. You may think she can do no wrong, but after what has happened, I intend to have nothing to do with her. We will not lend her a penny. So please do not let us continue this discussion any longer. I'm going for a walk in the garden. Was there anything else you wanted to talk to me about?
No, Connie. No.
Very well, Joe.
Oh, damn. What am I going to tell Phyllis? A weak-kneed, spineless creature who's too afraid of his wife to touch his own money? Oh, how on earth am I to put it to her? My dear Phyllis. Oh.
Hello, Uncle Joe.
Freddy, how did you get in here?
Dropped in through the window. I say, Uncle Joe...
Well, what is it?
I say, Uncle Joe, can you lend me £1,000?
Oh!
Half a jiffy. I say, don't go off the deep end for just a second. I can explain.
Explain?
Well, the whole trouble was I started at the wrong end. Shouldn't have sprung it on you like that. The fact is, Uncle Joe... I've got a scheme, and if you can only put off having apoplexy for about 3 minutes, I can shove you onto a good thing.
Go on.
Well, look here. You know all the trouble there's been about my dropping a bit on the races lately.
I do.
Well, I've put a lot of thought into it, and I've realised that the reason I lost all that stuff was simply because I was on the wrong side of the fence. Mm. The only way to make money is to be a bookie, and that's what I'm going to do. If you'll part with £1,000.
Me?
There's a pal of mine who was up at Oxford with me. He's in a bookie's office, and they're going to take me in too if I can put up £1,000.
Do you seriously suppose I would? But what's the use of wasting time talking? I have no means of laying hands on a sum you mentioned. If I had...
Oh, I know how you're situated, Uncle Joe, and I'm dash sorry for you. I mean, Aunt Constance and all that...
What do you mean?
Well, I know that Aunt Constance keeps an eye on the doubloons. I think it's a dash shame she won't unbuckle to help poor old Phyllis.
How did you?
Barely shame. I mean, love's love.
But how did you?
I was having a quiet after-breakfast smoke outside the window there and heard the whole thing.
Window? Window? You... You listen.
And dash lucky for you that I did, because I've got a scheme.
A scheme? You mean you've got a scheme to... Do you mean you've got a scheme to get me out of my difficulty?
Absolutely, Uncle Joe. Now, you remember what you were saying to Aunt Constance about some bird being apt to sneak up and pinch her necklace?
I do.
Well, why not?
What do you mean?
I mean, why don't you?
Steal my wife's necklace?
That's it. Pinch Aunt Connie's necklace. For mark you, if a husband pinches anything from his wife, it isn't stealing. That's law. I found that out from a movie I saw in town.
Are you insane?
Well, it wouldn't be hard for you to get hold of it. All you'd have to do then would be to draw a cheque to pay for another one for Aunt Connie, which would make her perfectly chirpy as well as putting you one up, if you follow me. Then you could slip Phyllis her 3,000 or whatever, push across my 1,000, and what would be left over would be a nice private little account for you to tuck away somewhere Aunt Constance couldn't know anything about it. And a dash useful thing to have up your sleeve in case of emergency.
You must be off your... No, wait a minute. Could it really be done? Is it feasible?
Feasible? Why, dash it, what the dickens is there to stop you?
But what if Connie were to find out? Your aunt would have a good deal to say.
Well, you would have to risk that.
Freddie, my boy, I daren't do it.
Oh, I say, don't be such a rabbit.
No, I daren't.
By Jove, I'll tell you what.
Not so loud.
I'll tell you what. How would it be if I did the pinching?
What?
How would it be if I...
Would you, my boy, would you really?
For £1,000, you bet I would.
Freddy, the moment you place that necklace in my hands, I will give you not 1,000, but £2,000.
Uncle Joey! Shh! It's a bet.
Do you think you can manage it?
Manage it? Just watch me.
Good. Then tonight I will write to Phyllis and say that I may be able to do what she wishes.
But don't say may. The word is will. Bally will, what, eh?
I must go out and get some fresh air.
Righty-ho.
But where, you will be asking after all this time, is Smith? The word goes round the shires. Woodhouse is off the rails again. But have no fear, he is not forgotten. I decided that Freddy would rapidly lose that first fine flush of exhilaration.
What if I'm caught in the bally act? I mean, it's all very well that a husband can't be caught for filching his wife's jewels, but a nephew is a vastly different kettle of fish. Hello? What's this? Leave it to Persmith. Persmith? Persmith will help you. Persmith is ready for anything. Do you want someone to manage your affairs, someone to manage your business, someone to take the dog for a walk, someone to assassinate your aunt? Persmith will do it. Crime not objected to. I say, this sounds the real thing. Whatever job you have to offer, provided it has nothing to do with fish... Fish? Leave it to Persmith. Address applications to R. Persmith, Box 365. It's like the answer to a prayer.
Smith had been the hero of a story I'd written for boys in 1909, in the days when my hair was plentiful and golden. My daughter kept nagging at me to revive him. I tried him in the city and gave him a run as a journalist, but until then I'd never thought of getting him down to Blandings. Smith is a strong character, and he certainly tends to run away with any story he's in. Well, see for yourselves. He's standing at the window of the Drones Club, staring at an exceptionally pretty and very well-dressed young lady sheltering from the rain under the awning of Thorpe and Briscoe, coal merchants of Dover Street.
What an indescribably jolly young lady. And that hat... But what's she doing marooned outside a coal shop? Chauffeur taking the day off? Ours not to reason why. What that girl needs is an umbrella.
Riggs?
Yes, sir?
This is a particularly fine specimen. Whose is it?
Well, it belongs to the Honourable Mr. Walderwick, sir.
Ah, then Mr. Walderwick is going to assist a beauty in distress. Yeah. Excuse
what?
Me.
Oh.
I think this might be the solution to your little problem.
Huh? Thank you.
Good day.
There are a few things I ought to tell you about the young lady in the Bird of Paradise hat. In fact, it's all so complicated and so vital to the plot that I think you ought to note them down. Got a pencil and paper handy? Right, I'll begin. Her name is Eve Halliday. The more quick-witted among you will instantly remember that that is the name of the young lady who is coming down to catalogue the library at Blandings. But there is more to her than that. For one thing, Freddy Threepwood is hopelessly, and I use the word advisedly, in love with her. For another, she is the closest friend of Phyllis, the wife of Mike Jackson, who is the closest friend of Smith. And Phyllis, you will remember, is the stepdaughter of Lady Constance's husband, Joe Keeble. Eve is determined to persuade Keeble to change his mind. Got all that? Right.
Indeed. Asking about his umbrella, eh?
Made a great fuss about it, he did.
And rightly. The good man loves his umbrella.
Of course, I had to tell him that you took it, sir.
I would not have had it otherwise. I like this spirit of candour. There must be no subterfuge between you and Comrade Waldwick. Let all be open and above board.
Oh, he seemed very put out, sir. He went off to find you.
I'm always glad of a chat with Comrade Waldwick. Always.
I think this is him coming now, sir.
Well, I mustn't waste the day in idle chatter. Gather ye rosebuds and all that. I must find a cab.
On our mind. You don't mind if I get in my cab, do you? It's raining.
Where's my umbrella? Where's my umbrella?
Don't shout, Comrade Waldwick.
Wigg says you took my umbrella. I mean, a joke's a joke, but that was a dash good umbrella.
It was indeed. I selected it as the only possible one from a number of competitors. I fear the club is becoming very mixed, Comrade Waldwick. You would hardly believe the rottenness of some of the umbrellas I inspected in the cloakroom.
Where is it?
The cloakroom? You turn to the left as you go in the main entrance.
Oh, my umbrella, dash it. I'm getting wet. Where is it?
Ah, there you have me. I gave it to a young lady in the street. Where it is at the present moment, I could not say.
You gave my umbrella to a girl, but I'm getting soaked.
Be brave, Comrade Waldwick. Face the thing like a man. I shall be vastly surprised if you do not go down in legend and song. Children in ages to come will cluster about their grandfather's knees saying, tell us how the great Waldwick lost his umbrella, Grandpapa. And he will tell them, and they will rise from the recital better, deeper, broader children.
No!
But I fear I'm keeping you standing in the rain. I really must conclude our little chat. Cabby, the morning glow, please.